When you hear the word Rolex, what immediately springs to mind, for most of us, I think, it's that undeniable allure of luxury, maybe the gleam of celebrity on a red carpet, or perhaps that dream watch you've admired from afar.
It's definitely a name everyone knows, instantly recognizable.
Exactly. A true byword for something. Well, exceptional.
Absolutely.
Today we're embarking on a deep dive into the glittering world of the most expensive Rolex watches ever sold, looking at things as of 2025.
And it's not just about the price tags, is it?
No, not at all. This isn't just a list. It's really an exploration into why these timepieces command such, you know, staggering prices.
Yeah.
What makes them tick, really.
And what's happening right now in the market, too, which is always shifting.
Right.
Yeah.
And to really set the stage, let's kick off with a blockbuster fact. The single most expensive Rolex ever sold.
Ah, the big one.
Yeah. It wasn't just any watch. It was Paul Newman's very own Daytona, fetching an astounding $17.8 million at auction.
Incredible figure.
Now that sets the tone, doesn't it?
It really does. It speaks volumes about that blend you mentioned, the craftsmanship, the celebrity mystique, and just, well, how rare these things can be.
So join us on this journey. We're going to peel back the layers of value behind these iconic timepieces.
I think you'll find some surprising connections.
Yeah, between luxury, investment potential, and some pretty profound historical significance. Ready?
Let's get into it. That Paul Newman Daytona, it perfectly illustrates the whole unique ecosystem of the Rolex market.
It really does.
And what's fascinating, like you said, is the value isn't just in the materials, the gold or the diamonds. It's often in the story, the history embedded in the piece.
That's where the aha moments are, I think.
Exactly. Those hidden layers.
But before we get to those truly jaw-dropping numbers, a lot of people probably wonder, why do Rolex watches cost so much in the first place? It's not like you just, you know, walk into a store and pick one up off the shelf.
Not usually, no.
I mean, by the time my name came up on a waiting list, I'd probably want a different model. Or my kids would be asking for it for graduation.
You're touching on a really crucial point there. It's about the brand's unique market structure. Rolex doesn't sell directly to customers.
Oh, he's the authorized dealers.
Exactly. They operate through this highly limited network of authorized dealers, or ADs. And what this means for you, the aspiring buyer, is...
Yeah, you typically can't just walk in and buy the hot models.
So you're looking at waiting lists.
Often stretching for months, even years, to secure one of these exclusive timepieces.
Okay, so if you don't want to play that waiting game, what's the alternative?
Well, that's where the secondary market comes roaring in. You're buying from other dealers, maybe private individuals.
Makes sense.
But here's the critical detail. While you get immediate availability, which is tempting, the prices are almost always higher than what you'd pay for a new one directly from an authorized dealer, assuming you could even get one that way.
Right. So the waitlist actually creates this premium on the secondary market. Precisely. This dynamic, it's driven by that incredibly limited supply and, frankly, insatiable demand. It naturally inflates the value for specific desirable models.
So it really is a classic case of supply and demand then. Limited watches, lots of people who want them. Prices go up.
At its core, yes. That's a huge part of it.
But does that mean every Rolex you buy is an investment? Like, should we all rush out and grab an Oyster Perpetual?
No, not at all. And this is a really important nuance to grasp. While some Rolexes are absolutely incredible investments, it's definitely not a universal rule.
Okay.
An entry-level Rolex, for instance, maybe something around $5,000 new. It's unlikely to appreciate greatly, certainly not in the short term.
So it's more about the specific models.
Exactly. The significant value appreciation, the kind that makes headlines, that's reserved for those rarer, more desirable models, often ones with, you know, historical ties or celebrity provenance.
Like the Newman Daytona.
Precisely. So the real aha here is that a Rolex isn't just a watch. It's this carefully cultivated ecosystem. Value is driven by meticulously engineered scarcity, a very robust secondary market, and a discerning collector base that knows how to separate true investments from, well, just luxury purchases.
That distinction is really key. Okay, so we've got a handle on why they cost so much generally. Now let's look at the Rolex watch market in 2025 itself. What's been happening recently? I know there's been some talk of shifts.
Yeah, if you zoom out, look at the Rolex market index over the last 5 years or so, you'd see a pretty steady rise for the brand overall. It was quite a run.
I sense a bud coming.
Well, yes. if you were an investor who maybe bought a high-end piece in, say, early 2022.
Right at the peak, maybe.
Potentially, yes. You might be feeling a bit less relaxed right now. What we've seen is a considerable decrease in the average highest Rolex watch price between April 2022 and the beginning of 2025.
A considerable decrease. Okay. Is this just a temporary dip, the kind of fluctuation we often see? Or are we looking at something more like a deeper market correction? What's the difference for listeners?
That's a good question. It definitely looks more like a deeper market correction. This isn't just a blip. It's been a sustained downward trend after a period of really rapid acceleration.
Okay.
And expert opinions, they're quite mixed right now on whether prices will continue to drop, maybe stagnate for a while, or possibly begin to rise again. It's truly a period of uncertainty for the broader market.
And does this correction hit all models equally? Or are some proving more resilient, maybe those entry-level ones you mentioned?
It's absolutely not uniform across the board. Interestingly, the Daytona, which, as we know, includes the most valuable Rolex ever sold, that category actually saw a tough second half of 2023. Several key Daytona references experienced a drop of about 9%.
Wow, even the Daytonas.
Yeah. But on the other hand, certain Deepmaster and Datejust models actually saw some modest gains over that same period.
Huh. That's quite a twist. How some can defy the general trend.
It really highlights how segmented the market can be. Some pieces are still climbing while others are definitely pulling back.
So let's connect this to the bigger picture. What are the key factors influencing the Rolex investment market in 2025? Demand must always be high, but what else is at play?
Demand is indeed solid, almost foundational. And it's built on Rolex's, bedrock reputation.
Innovation, craftsmanship.
Exactly. Innovation, master craftsmanship, and the simple fact that the brand is synonymous with luxury and status. This inherent prestige, combined with their limited supply strategy, ensures there's always strong underlying demand, even when the market's going through a correction like this.
And their historical resilience must play a part too, right? I mean, it's a brand that's weathered a lot of global storms.
It absolutely does. Rolex watches have historically held their value remarkably well through economic downturns, periods of inflation, even political instability.
They're seen as tangible assets.
Precisely. Built to last generations, often becoming treasured heirlooms, that's a powerful underlying driver of demand. It's almost like a safety net for wealth for some people.
Okay, so solid demand. What about the supply side then? You hear about them investing billions in new factories. Is that going to finally flood the market and bring prices down?
Yes, supply is obviously the other side of that coin. The limited availability is a key reason secondary market prices stay so high. And Rolex has, in fact, invested billions, a huge amount, in building new production facilities and also securing the skilled artisans needed.
So when did those come online?
Well, the projections are for these new facilities to begin production this year, 2025, then another possibly in 2026 or 2027, and then another big one in 2029.
So more watches are coming.
Yeah.
Eventually. But will that impact the super expensive, really rare pieces we're talking about today, the ones going for millions?
That's the really intriguing part. While this new production might help satisfy some of the pent-up demand for more standard models, its effect on the value of the very expensive, the truly rare, or the historically significant Rolexes, it's expected to be marginal at best.
Why is that?
Because those pieces derive their immense value from their absolute uniqueness, their story, their provenance, not just general production numbers. They're really in a different league altogether.
That clarification is really helpful. Okay, beyond the internal brand dynamics of supply and demand, the broader economy must play a role too, especially now with inflation still a concern for many.
It certainly does. Economic uncertainty, coupled with factors like inflation and higher interest rates, it naturally dampens people's willingness to make huge splurges on luxury goods like a top-end Rolex.
People tighten their belts.
Exactly. So the big question hovering over the 2025 market is whether the global economy can bounce back strongly and inject more confidence into that kind of luxury spending. Consumer confidence is a huge factor.
And then there's competition. I mean, Rolex is huge, but they aren't the only game in town when it comes to high-end timepieces.
True. While the traditional luxury watchmakers Patek Philippe, Audemars Piguet, etc. remain strong competitors, we're also seeing the emergence of newer, independent brands gaining some real traction, especially with certain demographics.
Interesting. Does that affect Rolex?
It raises an important question, definitely. Younger generations are beginning to define what luxury means to them, and this demographic shift could potentially alter demand patterns, both for the really high-end Rolexes and maybe even their more, let's say, reasonably priced counterparts. It's a fascinating evolution to watch.
Wow. All these factors create a really complex dynamic landscape. But now, let's get to the pieces that truly capture our imagination, the world's most expensive Rolexes. As we explore these, what patterns or recurring themes should we be looking out for? What explains their extraordinary value?
Excellent question. As we go through them, you'll see a few key things pop up again and again. The power of provenance, that's the documented history, who owned it, where it came from.
Write the story.
Exactly. That often linked to celebrity ownership or major historical significance, plus just extreme rarity. Those are the recurring themes. These stories, these connections, they elevate the value far, far beyond the actual gold or steel or jewels involved.
All right, let's dive into some of these incredible stories. Maybe start with that allure of celebrity and cinematic magic.
A great example is the 1967 Rolex Submariner owned by Steve McQueen. This was a reference 5512. It sold for $234,000 way back in 2009.
Not millions, but still significant.
Right. And the watch itself is a beautiful classic Submariner, but its value is almost entirely driven by its connection to its famous former owner, the King of Cool himself.
And some watches don't just have celebrity ties. They have direct film history, right? Like Marlon Brando's piece from Apocalypse Now.
Absolutely. That Rolex GMT Master fetched $1.9 million in 2019. And what's amazing is Brando's initials and last name were actually crudely carved into the case back.
He did it himself.
Apparently so. Making it this truly customized vintage item with a direct, tangible link to a legendary film and actor. Talk about personal touches adding value.
Incredible. And speaking of film, fictional heroes can drive up prices too. James Bond's watch from Live and Let Die.
Oh, yeah. The 1972 Rolex Submariner, worn by Sir Roger Moore, it was specifically modified for the film. Remember the circular saw bezel? That reference, 5513, sold for $365,000 in 2015. It just proves that history and cinematic ties, especially when there are unique modifications like that, add immense value, way beyond the watch's original function.
Beyond Hollywood, though, some watches have incredible historical and cultural significance. They tell stories of nations, of leaders.
Exactly. Take the gold Rolex Oyster Perpetual that was gifted to Dr. Rajendra Prasad, India's very first president.
Wow, okay.
This was a one-of-a-kind piece. Pink gold was an engraved map of India and the date of its first constitution on the dial. It was valued around $444,000.
But it didn't sell.
That's the unique part. It was never sold at auction. The Indian government actually intervened to have it returned to Prasad's family.
Really?
Yes, it highlights its profound historical and cultural status, basically a national treasure.
That's amazing. And sometimes the story is less about grand history and more about maybe sentimental value leading to unexpected price tags, like Jack Nicklaus's Rolex.
That's a perfect example. The Jack Nicklaus Rolex Day-Date. It was given to him in 1967. He wore it almost daily for decades.
His everyday watch.
Pretty much. It sold for an astonishing $1.2 million in 2019, and all the proceeds went to charity.
And the estimate was much lower, wasn't it?
Oh, way lower. Auctioneers had estimated maybe under $200,000. Its immense cultural significance for golf fans, the sentimental value, plus the charitable cause, it just blew past
It
expectations.
makes you think, doesn't it?
Yeah.
What seemingly ordinary item today might be a multi-million dollar heirloom in 50 years, just because of the story it tells.
It's a powerful thought, that provenance factor again.
And then we have those watches where value comes from sheer rarity or maybe aesthetic quirks.
Yes, like the Rolex Submariner 1962 Rare Edition. It got nicknamed the 369 Submariner.
Why 369?
Because of its unique dial, it features the numerals 3, 6, and 9 instead of the usual hour markers you see on Explorers, but here on a Submariner. Very unusual. One sold for £200,000 back in 2021.
And that rarity drives the price.
Hugely. This specific aesthetic deviation makes it so rare that apparently over 10 versions have actually surpassed the $1 million mark in auctions more recently.
Wow. And speaking of rare aesthetics, Eric Clapton's Daytona, that's considered like the Holy Grail by some collectors, right?
The Oyster Albino Cosmograph Daytona, owned by Eric Clapton. Yes, it sold for $1.4 million back in 2015. It's a 1971 reference, 6263.
What makes it albino?
It's one of only supposedly four no examples with distinctive silver chronograph subdials instead of the usual black or contrasting color. This gives it that unique albino look that collectors absolutely covet. It really stands out.
What an incredible collection of unique stories and values. Okay, now for the cream of the crop, the undisputed heavyweights. Let's count down the top five most expensive Rolexes ever sold. Starting with number five, the anti-magnetic reference, 4113.
Right, this watch, often nicknamed the Split Seconds, sold for $2.6 million in 2020. What makes it exceptionally rare is, first, its production. Only 12 were ever made, way back in 1942.
Only 12?
12. And apparently they were never sold to the public, maybe given to racing teams or something. Only 8 have ever surfaced.
And the split-second function?
That's the most remarkable feature. It's believed to be the only split-second chronograph ever built by Rolex. You can identify it by an extra pusher, a button appearing out of the ground.
What does a split-second do?
It essentially gives you 2 stopwatch hands. You can start them together, then stop one to record a lap time, for example, while the other keeps running. Then you can make the stopped hand catch up. It's a very complex mechanism and unique for Rolex.
Very cool. Okay, moving on to number 4, the Endgame Daytona. Sounds intense.
It does. The Rolex Daytona Ref 6270, the Endgame. This is an 18-karat gold piece, absolutely paved with diamonds. It shattered records for its reference when it sold for $4.1 million in March 2023.
Why the Endgame?
It's considered by many collectors as the ultimate Rolex collector's item, the pinnacle for that specific reference, hence the nickname. Just pure luxury and rarity combined.
And at number 3, we return to royal provenance with the gold Rolex owned by Bao Dai.
Yes, the Bao Dai Rolex, an 18-karat yellow gold timepiece owned by Bao Dai, who was the last emperor of Vietnam.
What makes it stand out?
It features diamond markers, but unusually on a black dial. Reference 6062, just its unique design combined with that incredible royal history, drove its value to $5.1 million at auction. Imagine owning a piece worn by the last emperor.
Truly history on your wrist. Okay, the second most expensive Rolex is another Daytona, famously called the Unicorn. Why that name?
The Rolex Daytona Ref 6265 Unicorn sold for a massive $5.9 million in 2018. It's called the Unicorn simply because it is the only known example of a vintage Daytona made in white gold.
Only one. In white gold.
As far as the market knows, yes. Daytonas, especially vintage ones, were typically made from stainless steel. They were tool watches. So finding one in precious white gold is incredibly unusual and rare, hence, like finding a unicorn.
Makes perfect sense. And finally, number one. We started with it, and it absolutely bears repeating. The Rolex Cosmograph Daytona, owned by Paul Newman. An incredible $17.8 million. It just stands alone.
Its status as the highest value Rolex ever sold remains undisputed after that 2017 auction, owned and worn daily by Paul Newman himself.
Bought by his wife, Joanne Woodward.
Right, purchased at Tiffany's, and it featured that famous personalized inscribed message on the back, "Drive carefully, me," which was from her to him.
Given his love of racing.
Exactly. Its cultural impact was just immense, giving that entire style of Daytona dial its nickname, the Paul Newman dial.
And it sold again later, didn't it?
Well, a Paul Newman Daytona. Possibly a different specific reference, but still that style, sold again in 2020 for $5.48 million, cementing the legendary status and desirability of these watches. It's believed only around 22 or so of these original exotic dial Daytonas were made back then.
Just astonishing. What a collection of stories. Now let's just briefly touch on something else, a very serious global event, and its surprising, almost immediate impact on the luxury watch industry.
Okay.
We've explored how internal brand dynamics and the broader economy shape this market, but sometimes truly unforeseen global events can create unexpected ripples. I'm talking of the war in Ukraine.
Right. The war, which escalated significantly with the Russian invasion in February 2022, had immediate ramifications across many sectors, including luxury goods.
How so?
Well, sanctions were imposed on Russia very quickly. In both countries involved, actually, citizens became very concerned for their financial security, looking for ways to safeguard their money.
And luxury watches became a vehicle for that.
For some, yes. Many Russian shoppers, in particular, reportedly turned to high-end luxury brands like Rolex almost as an investment, similar to how people might buy gold, to protect their cash value against potential currency devaluation.
Interesting.
Yeah, there were reports noting that even a newly purchased expensive Rolex could potentially see a 2-3x price increase on the secondary market almost immediately, purely as a hedge.
That's a powerful, immediate effect of geopolitical instability. Mm. Were there other impacts on the industry, maybe on the supply side?
Absolutely. Swiss watchmakers halted exports to Russia. They also faced significant supply chain disruptions, especially with trade routes through Russia that served markets in Asia being affected.
And materials.
That too. Russia is a major global supplier of diamonds and also precious metals like palladium, which are used in high-end watches. So the conflict led to material scarcity issues impacting the global diamond industry and overall watch production capabilities.
So even as demand, maybe driven by these safe haven purchases, remains high, production struggles to match it due to inflation, rising costs, and these new supply issues, potentially making even the most expensive Rolex in 2022 even more costly or simply harder to find in 2025.
It's a really complex web of global forces. It shows how intertwined these luxury markets are with international economics, politics, and unfortunately, conflict.
Indeed. It vividly demonstrates how quickly those ripples can turn into waves, affecting everything from availability to price.
Definitely.
We've covered a huge amount today. It's clear that the world of these incredibly expensive Rolexes isn't just about telling time, is it?
Not even close.
It's about this captivating blend of factors. The extreme rarity of a specific piece, the incredible master craftsmanship that goes into it, the undeniable allure of celebrity ownership, its unique historical significance, and sometimes just a completely distinctive feature that sets it apart from everything else.
And the 2025 market, as we discussed, is certainly in a complex phase. You've got the recent corrections after that big run-up, the ongoing impact of global events like the war and economic uncertainty, and really varied expert outlooks on what the future holds for prices.
It's a truly dynamic landscape for collectors, for investors. It requires careful attention.
And a deeper understanding of all those underlying drivers we talked about.
Which brings us to a final provocative thought for you, our listener. In a world where a wristwatch can be worth millions, sometimes tens of millions of dollars, what truly defines luxury or value?
Is it purely the materials, the intricate engineering inside?
Or is it the story it tells, the person who wore it? Or maybe just the sheer scarcity that makes something desirable?
It makes you think about your own possessions. What personal items do you own that hold immense sentimental or perhaps historical value, maybe far beyond whatever their material worth might be?
Something to ponder.
We encourage you to continue exploring how these broader economic and geopolitical forces intersect with this fascinating world of high-end collectibles. There's always more to learn, more to appreciate in those hidden layers of value.
Far beyond just the TikTok of a movement. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive.